It's so great to be back with you with another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's featured guest, Chief Actuary of LTCG, Vince Bodner. Well, the actuarial sciences have regularly appeared as the world's leading profession for 30 years, but few people outside the industry understand the subtle nuances. So it's a pleasure to welcome Vince Bodner today, Chief Actuary, named as one of the world's most creative minds in the insurance profession. Welcome, Vince Bodner.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that very nice welcome.
Since its humble beginnings on Lombard Street with Lloyd's of London, the insurance industry has really morphed into this multi-trillion dollar business model. It's come quite a long way. Now billions of people worldwide can rest easier at night, knowing their homes, autos, and their loved ones have economic protection. Now, actuaries help to quantify the price of that peace of mind to the overall benefit of shareholders, policyholders, and to society as a whole. If you could, please, give us an overview of the actuarial profession. Maybe we could start off there. And feel free to add any issues and nuances. This is a commercial-free program, so you can run with the ball.
You've captured the basics pretty well. Actuaries, we are mathematicians at heart. We study, and we're also very adept at understanding probability and statistics. And so what we do for insurance companies is determine, you know, for a given risk pool, how much in aggregate the people in that risk pool will incur in claims. So, you know, for example, if you've got a pool of, just say, 10,000 people, we will study statistics about mortality and determine, based on the characteristics of that pool, how many people in that pool may die over the next year, for example, just to pick a morbid subject. Of course, not everybody will, but for those who do, that's a tragedy. And so the other people who have contributed funds into that pool, they'll put it in for the benefit of receiving a payment if they run into that tragic event. And so, you know, actuaries need to understand what drives the probabilities for a given event. So again, that's very statistical. We look at historical data, understand not only what the probability might be for an aggregate pool, but for, you know, individuals as well. So we will look at various characteristics. Like, for example, you know, females have lower mortality rates than males, so we need to understand that. Older people die more frequently than younger people. So we need to take all these different mixes and predictors, we call them, and factor those in.
While preparing for the exam P, you know, I couldn't help but notice that the Bayesian analysis is, I think, integral to many areas within the field. For instance, just to give our listeners a basic overview, it's sort of an interesting probability or examination of the world in reverse. So let's say that we know that A has occurred, maybe a car accident has occurred. We'd like to know what is the probability that it was either one, two, or three models of the car or ages of the individual. What is the likelihood of that probability stream? It's sort of counterintuitive, but it's a remarkable, you might call it an induction method, a posteriori.
So what actuaries will look for is our predictors. And these are things that tell us what characteristics really drive the incidence of an event up or down. And again, I gave a few examples of that with respect to mortality. We know that females have lower mortality rates than males. Older people have higher mortality rates than younger people. That's very simplistic, but there's a whole area of actuarial science that will dive down and look at other correlations. For example, a good example of this would be in the property casualty industry, specifically, you know, the auto insurance industry, where actuaries are constantly studying the different characteristics of people who get in accidents versus those who don't. And some things pop out of that analysis when we look at, you know, lots of data about these people. For example, people with higher credit scores have accidents a lot less frequently than people with lower credit scores. That is now a rating factor. Once the property casualty industry discovered that predictor several years ago, that became a rating factor. And many people in your audience probably are now familiar with this. They may get a letter in the mail from their auto insurance company saying, I'm sorry, your premium rates are going up because your credit score went down. And someone will think, well, I haven't had an accident. Why is this happening? And it's because of this predictor, this thing, something about you changed that is factored into this actuarial analysis. And that's just one example, but actuaries are constantly looking for these in, you know, all fields. The auto industry, health insurance, the health insurance industry is now looking at these very carefully. And then that is making its way into, you know, many other fields as well. And they call that predictive modeling is the specific term for that.
You mentioned at the beginning that actuaries really are at heart mathematicians. Folks really recognize the significance of the applied mathematics there. And that leads me to another question I have for you. It's interesting as we read through the literature how many tests that are given, such as mammograms, oftentimes come up with false positives. Some of the research here is, I think, astounding that just because one receives a positive test there, meaning that there could be the need to see an ontologist, that doesn't necessarily mean that there is a high statistical probability that one has the disease. And it really is the conditional probability behind that according to several articles, recent articles, last 5 years or less, timely peer-reviewed articles, that seems to indicate that even some of our best physicians haven't been given the proper mathematical training to understand the results that they receive, which could lead to numerous unnecessary procedures. Chief Bodner, I wonder if perhaps you'd like to discuss the areas that you find most interesting, let's say over the next 5 to 10 years in your field.
Sure. I see a lot of change particularly in longevity. So people are living longer. That's a phenomenon that we have been recording as an actuarial field for probably the last 100 years or so. But it seems like that is accelerating quite a bit within the last couple of decades. And on the surface, that sounds like a really great thing, that people are living longer, and it should be. You know, we should live in a society where living long is a great thing. But it is really beginning to change some of the models and some of the thinking around how we price things. You know, how much longer are people going to live going forward? If these advancements in science continue to make us live longer, what does that mean? For people, for the life insurance industry, it's a great thing. If people are living longer, they're not going to pay claims until longer. However, it's a different dilemma for people, for the annuity industry, paying out annuities for people who, you know, until the end of their life. It's a different thing for people in the health industry where, you know, we have to think about, again, on the surface, it sounds like it's great that people are living, but is that also resulting in morbidity, what we call morbidity compression? Are people living healthier when they're living longer, or are they getting sicker at the same time and living sicker for longer? So these are things as actuaries we're really trying to struggle. We're struggling with, you know, what does this all mean? And it has different pushes and pulls in the different insurance industries. And I think for society as well, you know, if we're living longer, is the labor pool going to be big enough to provide the services for the people who can't provide them for themselves today? These all work their ways into not only the actuarial factors, but economic factors and demographic factors and cultural factors that we all have to struggle with. And so actuaries, you know, we have to model these things out so that we as a society can react to and plan for them. Used to be, for example, you retired at age 65 and your lifespan might have been another, you know, 6 to 7 years. It's not like that anymore. I mean, people live, you know, over 20 years past when they retire. So it just changes the what you do before retirement. So I think, again, as a society, we have to think about how this longevity trend is going to affect us and how we ought to change our behavior to meet our needs in a society where we're living longer.
I think this just opens up Pandora's box for discussion. For instance, we read statistically, recently at least, that the lifespan of the typical female who changes to a vegetarian diet can extend 7 years on average, and then for the typical male, almost 10 years, simply by making that one subtle change in diet. I'm sure that that would be an important part of these actuarial models. And then, of course, we also know that probably teetotalers and non-smokers in particular, things of that nature, would seem to be critical, particularly, as you mentioned, in the health areas, as well as the annuities, which continue to pay typically until the end of the lifespan. Any comments?
Well, yeah, and it's, all these things you're talking about are new predictors that, again, actuaries need to be aware of and look for as we are developing our predictions. So if diet has an effect, then that needs to be pulled into the things that we're considering when we create our models.
You were speaking earlier of the demographics, which is just key and integral, I think, to formulating sufficient models for these forecasts that you've alluded to. There's also been, I think, a little bit of blowback, you might agree, that perhaps we're not comfortable in some factions of society with how that data has come into play and whether or not there shouldn't be some oversight. Any comment?
Yeah, I agree with both. I agree that data is very important and that it needs oversight. And so, but I think our society needs to understand that, you know, the more information that can be gathered about them, their lives, it can make their lives a lot easier. Like, for example, I don't know if you're familiar with the iPhone app Waze. That's an application. It used to be people didn't want anybody knowing where they were driving, how fast they were going, any of that. But now there's an app where you can sign on and you share all that information anonymously with everybody else who's driving. And it's great because now we're sharing information about where traffic is, how fast it's flowing, where there's hazards on the road. And this information makes your life easier because now you can navigate around all that. And I think people are willing to give that information because what is given back to them is something that's useful that they can apply in their lives in that moment. And I think as a society, we need to get to a point where, because I think just ultimately, you know, the more information we can share about ourselves, again, it can be anonymously. I think that's really the trick. The more we can learn about ourselves so that we can use it and implement it in our lives. Again, I think the Waze app can be, this isn't a commercial for Waze, but that's a great example of if there's some way that we can give more data to people that can do something with it, give us back something that we can use. I think your society will very much benefit from it. Like, for example, if you could collect information about what everybody's eating, and that turns out that, you know, the people that are eating this certain thing more are living longer or are healthier, and that information can be tabulated, summarized, and get back out to people in a trustful way. Well, you can make a behavior correction right then and there. Again, just like knowing where the traffic is and getting around it. Again, I just think knowing things that you can change in your daily life to make yourself healthier, get into accidents less frequently, live longer, I think that's all information that would be helpful for society, not just insurance companies.
Many free apps out there now monitor, for instance, pedometers and things of that nature through your iPhone, if you will, or other PDAs, and monitor, you know, your heart rate. Not terribly expensive, but I'm starting to hear just among, you know, my small circle of friends how this is becoming an everyday occurrence. So that's really just listed for our listeners. Maybe I haven't mentioned this on the show. We try to keep health as at least an undercurrent here, a theme on the broadcast. Chief Bodner, what a pleasure it has been to have you here on the show today. And I wonder if there's any information that you'd like to share about your institution. Are there any parting comments, sir?
Yes, I just would like to play a little bit of a commercial for the actuarial field itself. For those of you, you know, in the audience that have an inclination towards mathematics, this has got to be the best kept secret for mathematicians. Most people don't know about the field. It's a great field. We cannot attract enough people into it on an annual basis. There's more of a demand for what we do than there is a supply for people that are willing to be actuaries. It's a great career. It pays well. It's not ranked the number one field for no reason. There's a good reason for it. So I would encourage anybody in the audience that thinks that they may be inclined to be an actuary to take a look at the field. Just Google, what does it take to be an actuary or what is an actuary? You'll get lots of information. I would encourage you to look into the field because we need you.
I'm on board with you, and I'll give a little promo here as well from my local alma mater. Clemson University has a really fantastic program, mathematics program, and they're offering Math 4300, which I sat through for Exam P, and we also have a great program for Exam FM, which is typically the follow-up to Exam P. And if your child or even you love mathematics and excel with standardized tests, and you want to follow a fascinating track where you'll be taking exams over a period of, let's say, 5 to 10 years, depending on your proficiency, you could become an actuarial fellow. It's just a remarkable profession. Chief Bodner, what a pleasure, again, to have you here today. Thanks for taking time from your busy schedule. It's very gracious of you, and we wish you the best, sir.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking with you.